Network will do what I want. Unless moving a wormhole is disruptive to the architecture of the local network, or would create a hazard to the wormhole. Also, I need to provide a reason why I want the wormhole moved. A reason better than, so filthy monkeys do not become extinct. That is a good reason, Skippy. Not to the network, it isn't. Okay, good point. What reason did you give? I haven't given a reason yet, dum-dum. Dreaming up bullshit stories is your job. Fine, I'll think of something. Why is it good news that you can move a wormhole if Sleeping Beauty is busted? Because, while Sleeping Beauty is the closest wormhole to Earth, it is not the only wormhole in the area. Besides Sleeping Beauty and Gateway, there are two other wormholes within a 21 light-year radius of Earth. One of them is only 1.2 light-years farther than Sleeping Beauty. Let's call that one Backstop. Both of those are dormant, and they have been dormant for a very long time. Before you bug me with a lot of blah, 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 stupid questions, the answer is yes. Yes, I can move one of those other wormholes close to Earth. That is the good news. The great news is while I was waiting for the Sleeping Beauty AI to respond, I was playing what-if scenarios, because I was bored. Like, what if I can move more than one wormhole? What if I could move several of them to create an easy route all the way from Earth to the Super Duty wormhole that connects to the Sculptor Dwarf Galaxy? A route where ships coming through one wormhole only have to travel a short distance to the next wormhole. Holy shit, you can do that? Shmaybe. Theoretically, it is possible. He shrugged. A little voice in the back of my head was warning me about something, like the law of unintended consequences. Good idea, but we can't do that. Moving wormholes would attract too much attention. I only suggested moving Sleeping Beauty because it is dormant and remote. By the time anyone noticed it is active, and that it is moved, aliens will probably already be at Earth. Hey, Joe. Duh! I thought of that, you numbskull. I'm not talking about moving active wormholes. The plan would be to move dormant wormholes, ones that no one out there knows about, or at least no one is watching. Are you screwing with me? Are there enough dormant wormholes to create a route from Earth to Sculptor? Yes. Joe, there are way more dormant wormholes than active ones. Like, a lot more. Most of the network consists of wormholes that have been dormant for millions of years. What I should have done is pursue the important question of whether he could really create a quick route between Earth and Avalon, or whether the whole idea was a shmaybe theoretical thing. Instead, because my mind wanders and I have the attention span of a 2-year-old, I went off on a tangent. Why are there so many wormholes if they aren't active? I do not know, Joe. That is a good question. Can you guess, based on what you know about the network? The only reason I can think of is that active wormholes have a limited lifespan. I hated when Skippy was vague about stuff when I wanted real numbers. Limited like what? Oh, on average, about 600 million years. A wormhole can't be continuously active for that long, of course, because it can damage local spacetime. Even though the emergence points hop around, the cumulative effect can weaken the fabric of spacetime in that area. So, each wormhole needs periodic downtime, so spacetime can recover. That is one reason for shifts in the network, although that is only one reason. It's complicated, and I don't understand all of it yet. A wormhole can operate for 600 million years? Is that just the time it is active, or does that 600 million number include downtime? Active time only, Joe. Why do you care? Because this is blowing my mind. The dormant wormholes are what? Spares? Replacements for when the original set of wormholes go offline permanently? Basically, yes. Remember, I am guessing. It's a pretty solid guess based on what I know. The next question was something I wasn't sure I wanted to know. How long could the network operate if it uses up all the spares? That's a tricky question, Joe, but if we assume the basic network needs roughly the same number of active wormholes as it has averaged over the past 100,000 years, then the last wormhole would fail in, about 15 billion years. Holy sh... My mind was blown. The Elders built their wormhole network to last 15 billion years? Billion with a B? Again, there is some guesswork in there. Say, plus or minus half a billion years. Why would the Elders have needed to build something that can operate for billions of years after they left the galaxy? Well, maybe they didn't. Maybe they just built the best network they could, and that's how long it can operate. That is bullshit, Skippy, and you know it. They didn't need to build all those spares and keep them dormant. You may have a good point there. This makes no sense. The Elders not only did not shut down the wormhole network when they ascended, they assured it will keep operating long after most stars in the galaxy have burned out. Skippy knew I was wrong about that, but he knew what I meant. This drives me freaking crazy. I threw up my hands. Why the hell did the Elders leave the wormhole network active? We know they don't want people messing with their stuff. That's why they left Sentinels here. That's why they don't want anyone poking around the Roach Motel. I do not have any answers for you, Joe. I am as troubled by those questions as you are. More troubled, since the Elders were my people. We need answers, Skippy. The AI that runs the wormhole network, it can't tell you anything? That AI is a very limited function system, Joe. I can't expect it to answer random trivia questions. This is not trivia. You know what I mean. The network knows what it needs to know. That's all. Like I said, it is not truly self-aware like I am. Can we agree that we both need answers and get back to the subject? Sure. When absent-minded Skippy thinks we have wandered too far from the topic of discussion, that was a good hint. What were we talking about? I asked. I think it might be possible to create a route from Earth to the Super Duty wormhole that leads to Sculptor, a route using dormant wormholes that no one is paying attention to. If I can move those dormant wormholes, I can create a route that will take only 12 days of transit time in each direction. 12 days? You told me like 40-something days before. That was when I imagined moving only one wormhole. This potential new route will require moving 6 wormholes, Joe. Whoa. If that works, how many round trips could we make in a year? 7, compared to 3 before. However, that still assumes loading and unloading will take 14 days each. That is far too slow. If cargo and passenger pods are pre-positioned in Earth orbit, and we use disposable gliders to drop cargo to the surface on Avalon, we can cut loading to 5 days and unloading to 3 days. 5 days to load a starship? That is ambitious. The survival of your species is at stake, Joe. If you monkeys can't move quickly with that motivation, maybe you don't deserve to survive. Besides, I will work on the logistics. The way he said that made me think. Are you getting excited about this evac plan, Skippy? Not excited, exactly. Let's say I am interested to see if it can be done. You haven't heard the bad news yet. The bad news is you don't know if you can actually move all those wormholes. Well, that too. I am fairly confident I can do it. One time, probably. The network might lock me out after the initial set of wormholes is relocated. Would it move the wormholes back to where they were originally? Unlikely. That would be too much trouble. No, I suspect that after the wormholes are moved and I activate them, the network will realize there was no need to move them at all. No need that the network cares about. That's the bad news? No. The bad news is I can only move a wormhole while it is dormant, so I can't be sure it will awaken and operate properly after it is moved. There are no guarantees. Got it. No, you think you understand, but you don't. That still isn't the truly bad news. Joe, moving a wormhole near Earth triggers the risk of a network shift that will cause me to lose control of Gateway. It would wake up, and I wouldn't be able to shut it down. The Maxalt's ships blockading the far end will suddenly have easy access to Earth. Shit. That's no good. Exactly. The only solution, if you really want to do this, is for me to disable Gateway before I try moving another wormhole in that local network. Disable it, like, take it offline. Permanently. Damn, I don't like the sound of that. You want to disable Gateway before we know whether you can move this backstop wormhole? Before you know whether you can wake up backstop once it gets near Earth? Basically, yes. Remember I mentioned there are 2 other dormant wormholes within 21 light-years of Earth? Before I start moving backstop, I would need to permanently disable that other one also, to be safe. Shit. We could lose all access to Earth with no guarantee backstop can be moved, or that it will operate at all? Correct. It's a hell of a gamble, Joe. Although really, there's not much downside, really. No downside. How the hell do you figure that? Right now, with the blockade of Gateway, we already have no access to Earth, so if I disable Gateway, we don't actually lose anything. Shit. I actually can't argue with you about that.
Chapter 19. Before committing to permanently disabling Gateway, I needed to think about it for a while. More important, I needed advice. Before talking with Chang or Sims or Smythe, I called Nagatha.
Colonel Bishop, how may I help you?
She was not her usual cheery self, but none of us were feeling cheery at that moment. Also, I knew she was distracted by ongoing work to assimilate the control functions of all the upgrades.
Nagatha, I need advice.
From me, dear?
She was surprised.
Surely you should first speak with...
Yeah, I know, my senior staff. The problem with that is, they are my subordinates. They know how I think, and they might subconsciously try to tell me what I want to hear. Plus, I kinda know what they will say, and right now Smythe is in no condition to be making difficult decisions.
I sense that is not the only reason you are not including them in the discussion.
You're right. I know what they will say, and I don't like it.
Do you know what I will say?
No, that's the point.
Very well. I will help in any way I can. However, the subject may be outside my area of...
The subject is outside my area of expertise also. Nagatha, sometimes when you're talking through an issue with someone, it helps just to have someone listen, you know? It's like it helps for me to talk out loud instead of the conversation running in my own head. Also, when you talk with someone, you have to organize your thoughts so they make sense, and that forces you to think, you know?
Being human sounds extremely complicated, dear.
It is. Okay, here's the problem. You may already know about this if you have been talking with Skippy.
About moving wormholes?
Yes, Skippy has, of course, kept me informed.
He has been boasting non-stop about this new addition to his extremely awesome set of capabilities. I wish I had a hand so I could slap that little twit.
Nagatha, I laughed. Everyone wants to slap Skippy once in a while.
I have tried ignoring him, but he bypasses my buffers.
I will talk with him about that. Okay, so you know that Skippy thinks he can move wormholes. Can you guess my dilemma?
I believe so, yes. You are concerned that the gateway must be disabled before he begins moving the wormhole he is calling backstop, with no guarantee that backstop can be moved a sufficient distance, or that it will open properly once it is in position.
Yeah, that is the problem.
Skippy did say you were whining about the issue.
Whining?
Oh, dear. Did I upset you? He said you were whining and moping around and wringing your hands and generally doing everything you could to avoid making a completely obvious decision.
That little shithead.
I'm gonna... Well, this is awkward... Joseph, I agree with Skippy. Not about whining. He is too harsh on you. He does not appreciate the enormous burden of responsibility on your shoulders. However, in this case, it does appear to me that the decision is fairly obvious if you think logically about it.
Crap.
Joseph, were you hoping I would disagree?
I was hoping we could discuss it, talk it through.
We can certainly do that if it would help you, dear. Then you can make the only decision that makes sense.
Well, great then.
The talking part does seem to be a waste of time, but I am not a human, so...
Fine, I sighed. Walk me through why this is so obvious to everyone but me, okay?
You will not be insulted?
Trust me, I am way beyond that. Go ahead.
Very well.
She slipped into elementary school teacher mode. Her voice softened, and she spoke slowly, like she was trying to explain mathematics to a first grader.
First, can I assume our objective is to protect Earth, or if that is not possible, to bring as many humans as possible to the beta site?
Sure, yes.
Good.
I mentally pictured her patting me on the head for giving the right answer. Maybe if I got another question right, she would give me a lollipop. She continued in the same condescending tone of voice.
The first objective, that of protecting Earth, is of course not possible. Our last mission stranded a Maxalt's battle group outside the galaxy, and there is no way to provide a reasonable explanation of why the battle group will not be returning to Maxalt's territory. When those ships are declared overdue, the most dangerous species in the galaxy will be focused on learning what happened to their ships. Soon after, they will be focused on turning Earth into radioactive ash.
Yeah, I get that part. We're playing for time before the inevitable destruction of our home planet, and it's my fault. Don't remind me, okay?
That leaves an alternative objective, that of saving as many humans as possible by bringing them to the Beta Site. Unfortunately, at present, we can't bring anyone from Earth to the Beta Site because the Gateway wormhole is under blockade.
Next, you're going to say that because of the blockade, there is no downside to disabling Gateway permanently. Either way, we can't use Gateway to get home.
Correct. Therefore...
Except that isn't true, I interrupted her.
It is not?
She was taken aback. I could tell by her tone of voice reverting to normal. No, it's not. Valkyrie is... I wrapped my knuckles on the bulkhead behind me. The single most powerful starship in the galaxy. We could run the blockade if we really need to, if we plan it properly and we can achieve surprise. We could get home, and we have a decent chance of taking the Dutchman home with us. It is not true there is no downside to disabling Gateway.
She cleared her throat. You are correct, Colonel Bishop.
Mentally, I high-fived myself with satisfaction. See? Never assume there isn't. Of course, flying our two ships to Earth would have absolutely no useful purpose. As you stated, Valkyrie is the single most powerful warship in the galaxy. One ship can't accomplish anything worthwhile. Valkyrie alone cannot protect Earth. Therefore, running the blockade would not accomplish any mission objective. It would be a stunt to make you feel like you are doing something, but actually it would be counterproductive. Running the blockade would show the Maxalts that Earth holds an important secret and make them more determined to investigate and ultimately destroy your homeworld. It also...
Okay. I waved my arms in surrender. I get it. Running the blockade is a bad idea.
Correct. Therefore, as Gateway is already unavailable for the foreseeable future, there is no downside to permanently disabling it. The only possible way you can assist Earth is to create an alternate access point by moving and awakening a dormant wormhole. Even if that wormhole can't be moved, or can't be moved far enough to make a difference, or can't be activated after it has been moved? Again, currently you have no access to Earth. Moving and awakening a dormant wormhole provides at least a possibility that we could get to your homeworld and do something useful without alerting the enemy or revealing that someone is flying around in a stolen senior species battlecruiser.
Crap. Joseph, I'm curious. You appear to be dismayed at the prospect of regaining access to Earth.
Dismayed, I thought to myself. That is not really a word people use to describe themselves. People say they are pissed off, or disappointed, or angry, but not dismayed. The people who use that word are mostly in English costume dramas, where all the men are wearing dinner jackets and have names like Lord Sir Pelham Bruxner Randall KBE, whatever the hell those initials stand for. The women faint and get the vapors because they are wearing corsets that are too tight, and I don't mean the fun kind of corsets. These corsets are under their big fancy dresses where you can't see them. Not that corsets are a particular turn-on for me. I mean, I know they must be uncomfortable, and... I'm just gonna shut up before I get myself in more trouble. Anyway, back to Nagatha's question. I am dismayed because I have to agree with your logic, and that means Skippy was right. Again.
Very good, dear. I am pleased that talking with you helped.
It was more like her talking at me, but I wasn't going to tell her that. Yeah, I feel much better about it now. Thanks.
Do you wish me to tell Skippy to proceed?
No, not yet. I need to think about it some more. I know that doesn't make sense to you. It's a human thing. I need to get used to the idea. Let it sink into my skull. Next, I called Skippy again. Okay, when can we get started on moving this backstop wormhole? He gave me the side eye. You're not going to discuss this with senior staff first? I am, but I already know they will tell me to go for it. If I'm going to say something stupid, I'd rather not do it in a group of people. Probably a good idea.
Joe, I do not understand what your problem is. We had no way to get back to Earth or do anything truly useful to help your people until you asked me whether it is possible to move a wormhole. Now we have the potential not only to get home for resupply and reinforcements, we also might be able to save thousands of monkeys.
Humans, Skippy. Thousands of humans.
Sure, whatever. Anywho, we have the fabulous opportunity, and instead of being excited, you're acting like this is the end of the world.
Because it really could be the end of the world.
Joe, he sighed. Realistically, you know the long-term survival of humanity is never going to happen, right? No matter what you do, it's one planet against an entire galaxy. I would say you have the advantage of having the magnificence of me on your side, but if the Rindaloo or Maxalts also have access to Elder AIs and they get into the fight, I can't help you much longer.
I do know that. I try not to think about it, okay?
Then what are you worried about?
I'm worried that 5 minutes after you disable Gateway, someone thinks up a better idea, and we will wish we hadn't killed the only wormhole that has guaranteed access to Earth.
Shit, Joe. It is always possible that someone will think of a better plan. Moving the backstop wormhole is the best plan we have now. You want to wait?
No, we can't wait. The clock is ticking. As soon as the Maxalts realize their battle group is late, they will be sending more ships to Earth. The longer we wait, the less time we have to transport people to Avalon. We need to go now.
Okay, then. What is the real problem?
The real problem is the law of unintended consequences. Every time I think we're doing something good, it leads to bigger problems later. Can you think of any downsides to moving backstop and waking it up?
The greatest risk is triggering a wormhole shift, of course. However, I think that is very unlikely, if we disable Gateway first. Based on what I know of network architecture,
how much do you know about that?
Not long ago, you told me that you had no idea how the network operated.
That was then. This is now, Knucklehead.
I have learned a lot. Enough to be certain that if we move backstop without first disabling Gateway, that will trigger an unscheduled shift and cause Gateway to open out of my control.
Are you certain we won't trigger a shift by moving backstop?
Certain?
No.
I am not absolutely certain. I am pretty damned confident.
Confident enough to bet your life on it?
Enough to bet your life on it? Come on, Joe, I'm immortal, remember?
What I can tell you is that I selected backstop because when I proposed moving it to the local network, it showed me the future configuration of the network. The only change is that backstop is near Earth and operational. No shift will be triggered.
Okay, that is a relief.
While I did not trust our absent-minded alien AI, I had to trust the wormhole network. That thing had been operating on its own for millions of years without any problem, until monkeys started screwing with it.
However, he waggled a finger at me to get my attention, I can't promise the same for the other local networks. To create a quick, easy, secure route from Earth to Avalon, I will need to move other wormholes that belong to other local networks. I can't guarantee shifts will not be triggered in those networks, but I don't think we care much about those. None of those networks are near Earth, or Paradise, or in regions critical to the Jarraptha and other potential allies.
Shit. Show me these wormholes you need to move again, please, and this time show me the area covered by each network.
I just sent the file to your laptop, Joe. Now, tell me the real problem.
What?
That is the real problem. The law of yes, blah, 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 the law is always lurking out there waiting to give you a smackdown. That is not the real problem. The real problem is your confidence is shot. We lost most of the crew, and you blame yourself.
I blame myself because it is my responsibility. Adams might never be the same again. I took that away from her because
you made a judgment call based on the best information you had at the time.
Joe, you can't change the past. You can affect the future.
If you are feeling guilty about something you couldn't control, you need to channel that energy into something useful, or you need to step aside and let someone else command the ship.
Wow. Joe, you told me that sometimes a friend needs to tell you the truth even if it is harsh. If you are emotionally unable to perform your duty, you need to admit that to yourself. That is harsh. Adams would tell you the same thing, only she would say, "Suck it up, Buttercup." Yeah. I had to laugh, though I didn't want to. She would say that. Okay, yeah. My confidence is not at an all-time high right now. Thanks, Skippy. I needed to hear that. The people we lost, I can't bring back. What I can do is be the best possible leader I can be. My Z-phone chimed with an alert, and I glanced at the time. In half an hour, I needed to be on the bridge for a duty shift. I'll look at the chart of those other wormholes you want to move, and we'll review the issue at the staff meeting tomorrow morning. But you already know what the decision is, right? He asked eagerly. Unless somebody really surprises me, yes. Oh, goody. Since you first asked about the possibility of moving wormholes and evacuating Earth, I have been making plans. I am deep into pre-production of my game show, and... Wait, what? What game show? Oh, come on, Joe. I'm talking about the smash hit game show where contestants from around the world will compete for a coveted spot aboard one of the evac ships. What? My brain locked up, and all I could do was glare at him. The working title is The Extermination Games, but that's too derivative. You want people to compete on a game show, and the losers stay on Earth and die? Well, when you say it that way. Right. It would be totally okay if I used the right words to describe this idiotic concept. How about we change the rules so the losers get the opportunity to buy evac tickets at a discounted price? That is a way better parting gift than the stupid lawn furniture that losing contestants get on most game shows. I cannot believe you think this is a good idea. How else do you plan to choose who gets aboard the ships and who gets left behind? I don't know. I truly did not know. My thinking had not gotten that far. Maybe a lottery or something? A lottery? He scoffed. Where's the fun in that? A lottery doesn't give people around the world a chance to cheer for the people they want to survive and be gleeful that the jerks they hate will not be getting a ticket. We are not selling tickets. Listen, shithead. Selecting who gets aboard an evac ship is not our problem. The governments of Earth will make that decision, and... Oh, bravo, Joe! That is a great idea. Governments always make wise and informed decisions. For example, sending the UN Expeditionary Force off-world to fight alongside your benevolent new allies, the Kristang. That was a brilliant decision. Governments make terrible decisions all the time. The point is, I don't have to make that call. I could help if you like. We could choose worthy candidates from the followers of the Holy Skippy Azumani. My mouth dropped open. You want to give priority to people who worship you? Sure, why not? They have clearly already proven their worthiness. Besides, Joe, I'm not talking about bringing all of those boneheads to Avalon. Just the people who have proven their faithfulness by attaining gold status. That means they signed up at least 20 other followers. That is not happening. End of discussion. But, no buts, drop the subject. If you want, you can discuss this with the governments of Earth when we get home. That was not a concession on my part. I figured Skippy was going to do that anyway. Deal. Getting to the far end of Backstop is complicated. We have to go through 3 wormholes. Then it will be 4 days of jumping to reach the site. How confident are you about moving a wormhole? How confident are you about thinking of a reason why the network should allow me to screw with its architecture? Besides, if I can't explain why the move is necessary, the network will lock me out. Working on it, Skippy. Working on it. The next morning staff meeting went pretty much the way I expected. The event was a little different from a typical meeting because Chang participated via hologram. The original hologram was too accurate. Everyone agreed it was creepy because it looked so much like Chang, but the face was not quite right. Skippy grumbled that he was doing the best he could with incompatible technologies aboard the Dutchman and Valkyrie, and that if we monkeys kept complaining, Chang could participate by voice only. Instead, I requested he make the hologram a bit fuzzy, so it was clear that the image was an effect. "How's this working on your end, Kong?" I asked. "Much better." He had reported that the holograms of us, that he was viewing from the Dutchman, were disturbing. "Great. Hey." I suddenly had an unpleasant thought. "My hologram on your end is me, right? Not a monkey or a clown.
It is you, Joe, Chang assured me with a laugh.
Okay, let's get started. I wanted to keep the meeting short because I knew Smythe was uncomfortable. He was still using two canes. No, sorry. He was using basically ski poles with rubber tips on the ends, and he didn't walk so much as lurch from side to side, swaying his hips left and right. The knees did not yet bend correctly, and it looked like his own nerve signals and the computer controlling the bionic legs were not talking to each other in perfect harmony. He stumbled sometimes, in a way that I thought was caused by the legs moving in a way he did not expect. Getting control of his new, hopefully temporary, legs was going to be a painful and frustrating process. The good news is that integrating the new legs gave Smythe something to do, and he was attacking the challenge with the same dedication and determination that had gotten him into the Special Air Services, then appointed as the commander of Star Team Alpha. Seeing him working up to 16 hours a day to integrate his new legs and to recover the strength, fitness, and coordination of the rest of his body had gotten me worried he was pushing himself too hard. So, I had asked Skippy about it a couple days ago.
Don't worry, Joe. He can't hurt his new legs. He was overdoing the exercises in the gym. As his doctor, I warned him that he risks damaging his internal injuries, which are still healing. He requested that I monitor him through the nanomachines in his blood and notify him when he is pushing too hard. Also, I told him that if he does not get at least 8 solid hours of sleep each night, I am simply going to deactivate his legs and knock him out right there, even if that means he sleeps in a passageway.
Wait, you can really make him go to sleep? I did not like that idea. Can you do that to any of us?
Skippy making the Theranin crew go into sleep mode is how we had captured the Flying Dutchman. At the time, I thought it was an awesome trick. The idea of him being able to do that to us was not so awesome.
No, dum-dum. I can do that to Jeremy because I am his doctor and he still has a medical pump attached to his left side. I use that pump to monitor his blood chemistry and to administer whatever cocktail of chemicals and biomimic substances like hormones he needs at the time. I can make him sleepy and assure that he gets deep, restful sleep.
Hell, getting deep, restful sleep sure sounded like a good deal to me.
Okay, thanks. Joe, I really am doing the best job I can for my patients.
That's great. We appreciate...
Even if I do find their meat sack monkey bodies disgusting!
Yeah. I thought of how I had been kept awake the previous night, burping, because the lasagna I had for dinner had too much garlic. That had been an uncomfortable night.
There are downsides to being a meat sack. Then I remembered that lasagna had been delicious.
There are also a lot of good things about being a meat sack.
I'll take your word for it.
Anyway, Smythe was in the meeting, eager to participate. As a symbol that I considered Smythe to still be our star team commander, I had not invited Kapoor to the meeting. He was much too busy with training the new team, and truthfully, I didn't know him well enough to decide whether his input would be useful to me. Smythe was there because I valued his experience and judgment, not his physical skills. The first, well, only item on the agenda is the status of moving the Sleeping Beauty wormhole. I briefly explained why that wouldn't work, but Skippy thought he could move the wormhole he called Backstop. The problem, I added, is that wormholes can only be moved when they are dormant, so we don't have any guarantee that it will wake up and operate properly after the move.
A dormant wormhole might remain dormant? Chang asked.
Then we do not lose anything if it fails to reactivate?
We lose time, I emphasized. We could try again to move a different dormant wormhole, but that would take time we don't have.
Then I told them the bad news.
Skippy, Smythe spoke first, his voice still hoarse.
How certain are you that gateway must be disabled before you can begin moving Backstop?
100%, the beer can boasted with confidence. The local network showed me the future configuration of the area after Backstop is moved. Gateway will be open, and I won't be able to control it for 6 months or longer. Gateway will reboot to its original parameters unless I take it offline permanently.
Smythe cocked his head and arched an eyebrow, which told me that old Smythe was coming back.
How certain are you the network will allow you to essentially kill an active wormhole?
Shit, I should have asked Skippy that question. If he answered that he didn't know, I would look like the fool that I am. Luckily, fortune was on my side that morning.
No problemo, Skippy sniffed. The network actually has been wanting for a while to shut down Gateway because of the damage I have caused. If it does get rebooted, it will still be functioning at reduced capacity. I proposed taking Gateway offline, and the network agreed. The network can't make that decision by itself, but it will accept my command. The discussion went on for about 40 minutes, with Nagatha joining to tell them what she had told me. The decision is obvious. And that is what the staff agreed unanimously, exactly as I expected. Gateway gives us zero chance to help protect Earth, Sims summed up the argument. This backstop, if it works, could save thousands, maybe 100,000 people, before the Maxults get to Earth. It's the best of a bad set of choices. Immediately following the meeting, I gave the order to set course for backstop and began jumping. Immediately after giving that order, I said a silent prayer that I had not killed humanity by making another stupid and reckless decision that seemed great at the time. In the passageway, Sims was waiting for me. That's why she was so valuable as an executive officer. She knew what I was thinking. Moving backstop near Earth is the right decision, sir. It's an inspired idea. Brilliant, she said without a trace of flattery. When Sims gave you a compliment, she meant it. So what's wrong? Screwing with wormholes to create shortcuts across the galaxy also was the right decision at the time. So was jumping the ship through an Elder wormhole, and a whole lot of other shit that seemed like it was a good idea at the time, and then blew up in our faces. I'm worried about what we don't know. We do know the Maxults are inevitably coming to Earth, and we can't stop their entire fleet, she replied gently. Sir, we don't have to commit now. You don't have to make a decision until we reach backstop and Skippy communicates with it. We have plenty of time. We did have plenty of time. Until we didn't. Joe, Skippy barked at me. Everything is ready. We are all waiting on you. I swear this is like hiding in a living room for a surprise party while the guest of honor is standing in the driveway with his car door open, trying to decide whether to go in the house or use the Taco Bell coupon that expires next week. Okay, Skippy, I get the idea. He was right. Everyone was waiting on me. We had flown to and located the backstop wormhole. Skippy talked with it and determined it was in excellent condition, just dormant. The network was ready to accept his command to begin moving backstop. The network was also ready and actually eager to disable Gateway. We received good news that instead of having to fly all the way to Gateway, disable it, and then fly to backstop again to initiate the move, the network could remotely disable Gateway from where we were. Hearing that got me excited at the prospect of remotely disabling other wormholes across the galaxy, but Skippy burst my bubble on that. Because Gateway was damaged, it was a special case. The network already wanted to disable that wormhole. All it needed was proper authorization, and Skippy had the authority. Or he could fake it. I didn't care either way. We are go. Move the wormhole. Excellent. Will do. Right after you tell me which bullshit story you cooked up to persuade the network that it should move the wormhole.
Crap. I had forgotten all about that little nagging detail.
The entire bridge crew was looking at me, and I was totally unprepared. Think fast, Joe, I told myself, like that was ever going to happen. Huh. I did think fast. Because you're the daddy and you say so, I suggested. What? You're a godlike elder AI, I suppressed my gag reflex, and it is just a local network controller. It has no right to question your instructions, unless you harm the network, right?
Yes, he drawled slowly while he considered. That actually will work.
But, I sense a but in there.
But I don't want to play that card unless I really need to. Every time I give instructions that fall outside the network's normal code of operation, I give the controller another reason to lock me out.
Okay, then we go with Plan B. Tell the controllers that you need wormholes moved within their local networks to optimize the future configuration of the overall system in the galaxy.
Wow. How do you know what is the optimal future?
I don't, Skippy. It's just bullshit. Each controller is only responsible for its local section of the galaxy, right? Who is responsible for the overall system?
Geez, I guess there is, or used to be, an elder AI assigned to handle that.
an elder AI like you?
I don't see why not. Sure. What the hell? I'll give it a shot.
He did. The local network controller questioned his instructions, but it also began preparations for moving the backstop wormhole exactly as we wanted. Sometimes it's best to just bullshit your way through a situation. By the time the other realizes you were lying, it no longer matters. I hoped it would no longer matter when we got all the wormholes moved where we wanted.
Chapter 20.
After we, or to be accurate, I should say Skippy, got the backstop wormhole moving, we flew around to get other wormholes moving. Skippy's original estimate was we needed to move 6 wormholes to create a shortcut route from Earth to the Super Duty wormhole that connected way out to the Sculptor Dwarf Galaxy. After examining the individual wormholes, he realized the original route wasn't going to work because one of the wormholes was not just dormant, it had been disabled by that local network. The explanation was something about a black hole that had passed through the area 8,000 years ago had caused part of the force line to become ragged, and reopening the wormhole would not allow the force line to knit back together. Whatever. All I cared about was that Skippy then decided we had to move 8 wormholes to create a route. The good news was the other 7 wormholes, besides backstop, were dormant in the normal manner, and there should be no problem with moving them. And, bonus, the route through 8 wormholes actually yielded a shorter transit to the beta site. No, that's not right. Using 8 wormholes meant going a third of the way across the galaxy, like going around your ass to get to your elbow. It was shorter in terms of what mattered to us, the distance starships had to travel between wormholes. How far two ends of a wormhole were apart didn't make any difference to us. The transitions were all instantaneous as far as filthy monkeys could tell. Anyway, the time to get from Earth to the beta site was shorter with Skippy's complicated cornfield maze of wormholes, and that was all good for us. What was the bad news, you want to know? Really, there wasn't any bad news. Sure, we had to fly around willy-nilly going forward and sometimes backward to get to the other 7 wormholes. That took time, and it took us away from our role of being a fearsome ghost ship threat, but it was also an opportunity. Along the way, we took detours to pop up in unexpected parts of Maxulk's territory. Without taking on any risk to ourselves, we were reminding the kiddies that we hadn't gone away, and they would never know where we would appear next. Following Skippy's advice, I started reading his narrative about the Alien Legion's mission on the planet Fresno, where they barely escaped from a death trap. They escaped, I noted, without any help from their supposed allies, the Ruhar. That incident confirmed my opinion of the hamsters, that they were generally decent people, and humans might someday be actual allies with them. But they had become cynical from their experience in the Endless War, and their government was not going to risk their own people to save primitive humans. If humanity was going to survive, we needed to save ourselves. Somehow. When we first heard of the Death Trap mission, I had read a summary of the after-action report Perkins sent to UNEF Paradise. It was a typically dry, matter-of-fact account of the events on Fresno, and I had gotten the impression there was a lot more to the story than what she put in the report. Now, thanks to Skippy pulling together all the reports, communications, battlefield video, and anything else he thought was relevant, I could read the details, focusing on the actions of the Mavericks. It was weird reading about people I knew, like Perkins, Ski, Shauna, and Cornpone. The story was interesting. So much that I brought my tablet to the gym and continued reading while riding an exercise bike. Walking back to my cabin for a shower, I was confused about something in the narrative. Why were Jesse and Shauna consistently referred to by their rank, but Dave was mostly called Mr. instead of... Oh. The realization got me jogging along the corridor to my cabin where I closed the door behind me. It took me a while to get over nearly being strangled by my freaking bed, and it was partly as an example to the crew that I was back to sleeping on the bed with the door closed. Still, I didn't use any sheets or blankets. I slept in sweatpants, socks, and a t-shirt. That was better anyway if there was an emergency. Besides, I slept alone. While that sucked, it was convenient. Now, sleeping alone just sucked. Skippy, I see why you wanted me to read this. He appeared on the back of the couch. I wanted you to read it so you would know what happened to your old friends and understand. Yeah, that's all great. You wanted me to read about Dave and Emily. Emily?
You mean Lieutenant Colonel Perkins?
You know what I mean. Those two are a couple. Dave quit the army. He is now a contractor working for the Mavericks.
Shit, I wonder what UNEF thinks about that.
UNEF HQ on Paradise is not happy about the situation. They are also realistic. Emily and Dave are not the first couple to serve together in that force.
Sure, but they are not serving together. She is his commanding officer.
Technically, that is not true. Dave is a security contractor, responsible for training.
Right. It only looks like he is doing the exact same job as a U.S. Army sergeant.
Hey, I didn't make the idiot rules you monkeys make yourselves follow.
Those rules are... I was about to say the rules are there for a reason, but over the years I had learned that many of the official regs just did not apply to a group of pirates racing around the galaxy. It was getting harder and harder to justify applying archaic rules written on a planet we might never see again.
Anyway, that is what you wanted me to see, right? That Emily found a way around the regs?
Actually, she didn't. She heard about another couple in UNEF who found a creative solution to get around the rules, and she followed their example.
Uh-huh. Listen, you think this would work here? Like, I'm speaking purely about a hypothetical situation, understand?
Purely hypothetical. Got it. He gave me an exaggerated wink.
Okay, so let's imagine that someone like, Gunnery Sergeant Adams had romantic feelings for someone above her in the chain of command. Who would that lucky guy be?
For the purpose of discussion, let's say he is Smythe.
Smythe?
Dude, seriously? This is all hypothetical, remember?
Okay, sure, whatever, he grumbled.
All right. Can you imagine Smythe suggesting to Adams that she quit the Marine Corps and the Merry Band of Pirates will hire her as a contractor? Do you see the problem?
Shit, yes. That would not go well.
Exactly. The Marines are her family.
What about the opposite? What if you,
Smythe, resigned his army commission?
That wouldn't work. We can't have a civilian leading a ship. A star team.
Ugh, forget all this hypothetical shit, Joe. Count Chocula is a civilian, and he was the mission leader.
Damn. There was a fantastic argument I had planned, and poof, it was gone from my head.
Huh.
Why couldn't you be a civilian and someone like Sims command the military crew?
Shit, I... take off my uniform? I looked down at my t-shirt and gym shorts. The shirt was gray with Army across the front on black. I was proud to wear that shirt. It was a big part of my identity. As much as I hated the bureaucracy and the bullshit confusing regulations, the Army was my family. I was damn proud to be part of the Big Green Machine, which was one of the Army's recent marketing slogans. No way could I imagine myself wearing a suit.
Yes, or you can forget all this irrelevant shit and just be pirates.
It's not that easy, Skippy.
It is that easy, knucklehead. I am not giving you advice. But if your choice is between wearing a uniform and something else you want, what will you choose? It is not that simple.
Crap, I don't know what Adams thinks about me or if she even remembers what she said.
You can't give me a freaking hint.
Doctor-patient confidentiality, like I told you.
Once again, I have a radical suggestion for you. Talk to her, you numbskull.
I may need to do that, I admitted.
Damn, if that conversation doesn't go well, it will really not go well.
Whew, I need to think about this.
Would it help if I designed a super cool new pirate uniform for you, instead of that drab army stuff you wear?
What is wrong with my uniforms?
They have no flair, Joe. He pointed to his royal blue outfit weighed down with gaudy gold braid. Look at my uniform. See, this commands respect.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Hold off on measuring me for a new pirate costume.
It's a uniform, not a costume, Joe.
Whatever. I need to do some serious thinking about this.
Sir, Smythe barked excitedly as he strode into my office.
Yeah!
He startled me so badly I felt an icy chill stab down my spine. When he interrupted my thoughts, I was concentrating on watching a replay of our epic 13th battle when we nearly lost the ship. The video recreation was so engrossing, I was in another world when he walked in.
Sorry, Smythe.
He peered at my laptop screen.
Ah, watching our latest near-death experience?
Folding the screen down, I sat back in my oversized chair. The damn thing always made me feel like I was 6 years old and sitting in a big boy's barber chair getting a haircut. The seat was too long front to back. If my knees were properly positioned, my back didn't touch the upright. That problem could have been solved by stuffing a pillow against my back. Again, that would make me feel like a little boy. So, not happening.
Yeah, every time I watch it, I find something new that I should have done better. Or not done. We can always do better.
Yes, but... I stole a glance at the closed laptop, wanting to get back to the video like an addict seeking a fix. I should have committed to fighting it out sooner. My hesitation caused us a lot of trouble.
You are so used to running away, it is difficult, he shrugged, to adapt an offensive mindset. You'll get it, sir.
He raised an eyebrow, as he must have seen the surprised and hurt look on my face.
When I said you, he added, I meant all of us. We have been avoiding direct combat for so long.
He let his words trail off.
Perhaps our instincts to be aggressive in combat have become rusty.
Oh, that made it somewhat better.
Reviewing an after-action report is useful only if you learn from it, he chided me. Not use it to beat yourself up.
His shoulders lifted as he took a deep breath.
Believe me, I know.
You? Doubts?
Ha! He laughed quietly. More than you can know.
A shadow fell across his face, remembering fallen comrades.
I keep thinking that if I had ordered Desai to hold us until the first dropship was recovered by the Dutchman. Smythe, you can that shit right now, you hear me?
I snapped at him with a vehemence that I didn't know was inside me.
There was nothing to be gained by going down that rabbit hole. I was in command. You did everything by the book. My orders were to egress that station as fast as possible, and I was right about that.
You did everything by the book, I added quietly. People still died. It's combat. Shit happens. The only person who fucked up that day was me. Cutting off his attempt to speak with a gesture, I continued. At the time, I thought I was making the safe bet. Jump out to a distance where our scanners were effective, look for an enemy ship before it could appear out of nowhere. I was wrong. If the only pieces we had on the board were our two starships, that was the safe bet. The Dutchman could have jumped away. What I didn't consider were the dropships. They were vulnerable. My move should have been to keep Valkyrie close, where our firepower could provide cover. Tapping my laptop, I thought of the hours I had spent watching a replay of the battle we called Armageddon. At my request, Skippy had turned it into an interactive simulation so I could try different moves. In almost all scenarios, keeping Valkyrie near the station to cover the dropships was the right call. With the battlecruiser in the area, the enemy ships would not have jumped in to wipe out most of my team. The only way that I should have jumped away to perform a recon was in the unlikely event that the enemy opposition was strong enough to take on a battlecruiser, and in that case, a recon might not have made any difference. The fact was, it wasn't just my fault. The guy I saw in the mirror when I brushed my teeth was humanity's most experienced starship captain, and even I still could not intuitively grasp the intricate rules of space combat. The Maxulks had been taking starships into combat since before humans were living in caves. We had no business fighting in space. Yet, there was no arguing that monkeys had been kicking ass across the galaxy. We were undefeated. Okay, we were undefeated because no one else knew we were in the game, but still, we were kicking ass all along the Orion Arm and beyond.
You should follow your own advice, Smythe observed.
Yeah. The worst Monday morning quarterback is yourself.
You don't have those in Britain?
No quarterback, sir, he grinned.
We do have plenty of people second-guessing the striker.
He pantomimed lifting his foot to kick a ball.
Or the coach, or the defense.
Different kind of football, I nodded. Same issues. You didn't come in here to talk football.
No, I had a thought. Our one ghost ship has been causing havoc across enemy space, and that is good. Next, you're going to say it is also not enough that we're not really doing anything that will prevent the Maxalts from supporting an offensive against Earth. Yeah, I get it. Sorry. My habit of interrupting people was okay with Skippy because he tended to ramble on in an absent-minded fashion. It was not okay with other people, and I needed to stop doing that. Smythe looked pained whenever I did it to him. Maybe the British were more polite.
That is basically true, yes. Also, we can't expect to repeat our success with hit-and-run raids. The enemy is hunting us and laying traps. Eventually we will get caught. And then we won't be able to exploit the wormhole that will hopefully be near Earth soon.
Agreed, Colonel. For now, I'm content for our little armada to act as a threat, keep the enemy off balance. In naval warfare, there is a concept called fleet in being. I read about it when I was studying modern and historical Navy combat tactics, trying to find something that might apply to space combat. Yes, sometimes I do things that are useful. I don't play video games all day. This fleet in being concept is that as long as a naval force is intact, it poses a threat to the enemy, and the enemy has to devote some of their ships to monitor and guard against this fleet in being. If the fleet ventures out to offer battle, the fleet could lose, and therefore cease to be useful. So, unless conditions are strongly in the fleet's favor, it should remain in port and continue to pose a threat without actually doing anything. That was my plan for Valkyrie. Until the enemy was certain our stolen battlecruiser was destroyed, we would tie up a substantial portion of their fleet without having to commit to battle. The Maxalts would need to convoy all their merchant shipping, and they could not send out lightly armed ships without being accompanied by a heavy warship. By attacking with a battlecruiser, we were forcing the enemy to completely change their tactics. Usually, frigates and destroyers escorted capital ships. Now, though smaller ships could not venture away from their bases without the protection of a heavy cruiser, battlecruiser, or battleship. Like the mythical fleet in being, we could lurk as a threat, waiting and watching for a perfect opportunity for another devastating attack. Perfect meant a big reward with very little risk to us. It was unlikely we would find such an opportunity now that the enemy was on the alert for us. But we had an advantage. Through Skippy's ability to hack into relay station AIs, we were reading the enemy's messages. We had to be careful not to fall for a trap, for Skippy warned the enemy eventually might suspect we were somehow hacking their communications. So, I was not in a hurry to take our mighty Valkyrie into action.
That will not last forever. If we don't conduct further attacks, the Kitties, one corner of his mouth turned upward in a hint of a smile. For some reason unknown to me, Smythe thought it amusing that the Maxalts had a vaguely cat-like appearance. Maybe he just didn't like cats. We'll relax their guard, and the strategic situation will return to the previous status. They will hope we have been disabled after our last fight, or that we are unable to keep the ship flying. With only one ship, they have to correctly assume our resources are limited.
Nothing he said was news to me. There had to be another reason he was in my office. You have identified a low-risk, high-reward target for us?
Not exactly. What I have in mind is a high-reward target. The risk might be too great for us to consider.
That got me intrigued. He recently had proposed strikes against space docks and other warship servicing facilities, and each time I had decided the risk was too great. The enemy had plenty of space docks. Hitting one or two would not put a dent in their ability to project force across the galaxy. If Smythe thought the risk of his potential target might be too much, then he must have identified one hell of a tempting target.
Don't keep me in suspense. What is it?
He had a fish on the hook and wanted to enjoy reeling me in.
The enemy's C-3 all goes through their Pixie technology, he stated. By C-3, he meant command, control, and communications.
Yeah. I was slightly disappointed by his response. Skippy says eventually we will need to replace our supply of Pixies. I do not want to go back to Detroit. When we captured the Lego pieces that Skippy used to assemble Valkyrie, almost all of the Pixies aboard those ships were damaged by the space-time distortion of our bagel slicer. Luckily, we found enough intact Pixies to add 4 sets to our collection. That left us thin, and we had to be careful how many times Skippy recycled the magical devices. Still, No way did I want to risk another death-defying raid on a pixie factory.
Detroit is one of the targets I have in mind, he said with an arched eyebrow.
As a target, sir.
Another hit-and-run attack. Not a heist.
Attack Detroit?
Why?
Oh, the obvious slapped me in the face. Sometimes my brain is really slow.
Holy shit. You want to knock out their stock of pixies?
Quite so, he nodded.
He had a bit of the look of a schoolmaster who was pleased a student had given the correct answer.
Not just Detroit. That planet is the factory where they make new paired units. The kitties also have two vaults where they store completed pixies.
Whoa! Skippy appeared on my desk, waving his hands. Just whoa! Hold your horses there, partner. Have you gone completely bloody balmy?
Skippy, I admonished him. Let the man talk.
Crazy talk, the beer can muttered. It's impossible, I tell you. Those vaults are too well protected.
Smythe was not deterred by discouraging words.
You tend to say everything is impossible until we do it.
Well, oh yeah? Skippy sputtered. We'll see about that.
That was a cracking comeback, Skippy. I winked at Smythe.
Oh, shut up, he pouted.
Gesturing for Smythe to continue, I glared at Skippy.
Go on. We hit their stock of blank pixies?
Exactly so.
Smythe kept one eye on Skippy as if daring him to interrupt.
If we can destroy their current supply and their ability to produce new units, we could cripple their defensive capability for years. They might not be able to stage a strike against Earth because they will be too worried about their exposure to an attack by the Rindaloo.
I like it.
Tilting my chair back, I stared at the ceiling while I imagined the delicious possibilities.
Damn!
Clapping my hands, I imagined the possibilities. Taking our mighty Valkyrie to hit a truly vital target.
Of course you like it, Skippy snapped. You are a moron. Let me explain why it would be suicide to even attempt to hit Detroit.
He explained. We listened. We also got chills from hearing how strong the defenses were around Detroit. Here's a fun fact for you. The Maxulks are not stupid. They had a layered strategic defense network around Detroit that extended 3 light minutes from the planet. That SD network covered a mind-bogglingly vast territory, which not even Valkyrie could penetrate and survive. We could try building another DeLorean and jumping it in near the factory, this time equipped with a nuke. But even that wouldn't harm the kiddies' ability to conduct military operations, because they had enough blank pixies in their vaults to last over 200 years, even at a wartime op tempo. Unless we could take out the vaults, we couldn't disrupt their use of pixie technology.
The vaults? Forget about it.
The vaults were inside the core remnants of gas giant planets that orbited neutron stars. Starships could not jump in or out anywhere close to a neutron star, and the planetary cores were so dense, Valkyrie's weapons could pound away for years without making a noticeable dent. The Maxulks had designed the defenses of their vaults to be secure against the Rindaloo. By the time Skippy finished explaining how it was impossible, truly impossible, for anyone to successfully attack those vaults, even Smythe had to admit we should drop the idea. I was glad that he didn't expect me to do the impossible again.
Chapter 21
Some mornings I didn't feel like eating breakfast. Maybe I was in a rush, or so groggy that all I wanted was coffee. Yeah, I know, breakfast is the most important meal of the day, blah, blah, blah. You're not my mother, so shut up. That morning was a coffee-only event, except for grabbing what I thought was a handful of raisins that turned out to be dried cranberries. After almost spitting them out, I ate them anyway, and they were good. By 10 o'clock, I was hungry enough that I couldn't wait for lunch, so back to the galley I went for a snack. Showing my remarkable self-control, I placed 4, and only 4, crackers on a plate and got a knife, anticipating slathering peanut butter on the crackers. That would keep me from getting hangry until lunchtime. Imagine my shock and disappointment when I reached for the jar of peanut butter that was always on the shelf next to the toaster. The jar looked full. Soon as I lifted it, I could tell the truth. The damn thing was almost empty. Unscrewing the lid showed me there was not enough peanut butter left to bother with. Some rat bastard had taken the last of the delicious treat and put the empty jar back without even notifying the team on duty in the galley to request another jar from storage. We had crates of the stuff, one of the few foodstuffs that was in good supply. That is why I ate peanut butter a lot. Everyone else was growing sick of it. The heinous perpetrator of the crime had not just casually pilfered my snack and ran. No. Whoever it was had worked at it. From the way the sides of the jar had been scraped clean, somebody had spent considerable time digging out the very last dregs of crushed peanuts. All that effort, so the poor jerk who came all the way to the galley for a snack would think they had a jar full of peanut butter, though actually it was... Holy shit. The knife clattering on the floor snapped me out of my reverie. Skippy, I called out as I stuffed dry crackers into my mouth. With our food supplies low, we couldn't afford to waste anything. Because I had crackers in my mouth, my call might have sounded something like, Fifi! Did you call me, or are you practicing some lame free association for the spoken word event? Ah! I took a drink of water so my mouth could function. I did call you. What spoken word thing? Aren't all words spoken? Not if you read them silently, dum-dum. This event is a poetry slam. People are writing poetry and performing it aloud. Why don't I know about it? Joe, please. You can barely read the label on a tube of toothpaste without getting lost. Hey, some of those ingredients are impossible to pronounce. Right. Anyway, you don't know about it because I didn't invite you. Oh. Who did get invited? I figured Skippy had somehow found two or three poets among our bloodthirsty crew of pirates, and his little Nerdfest was an exclusive club. Geez, let me count. Chang, Sims, Smythe,
It looks like I invited everyone except you.
What? Dude, seriously. You want to write a poem? No. If you did, would you read it in front of people? Oh, hell no. Then what is the problem? There was a problem, I think. Not getting invited to an event I did not want to attend sounded good, except when everyone else did get invited. Can I get back to you on that? Yes, if you phrase your statement in the form of a haiku. Haiku? Is that like a limerick? I guessed, hopefully. No? Google it, knucklehead. Also, if you called me to solve the mystery of the peanut butter burglar, you can puzzle that one through on your own, Nancy Drew. I don't intend to press charges, so don't worry about it. Then why did you call me? Oh yeah, where is Smythe right now? He just completed a team exercise in powered armor and is putting his kit away. Tell him the captain requests him in my office at his earliest convenience if he pleases. Okay. What if he isn't pleased? That made me laugh. Oh, he won't be pleased, that's for sure. Jeremy Smythe knew that earliest convenience meant immediately, and that it did not matter one little bit whether he was pleased or not. He came into my office, his hair and beard still damp, having taken just enough time to get his uniform sorted. Sir? Colonel Smythe. I tried to look stern, though my eyes might have betrayed my happy mood. I just came from the galley. Some cretin scraped the last molecules of peanut butter out of the jar and put the jar back as if it was still full. He blinked slowly at me. If I had just told him that I was applying for beautician school when we got back to Earth, he would not have been more surprised. You wish for me to investigate, sir? No, I laughed. Seeing that jar gave me an idea. You want to destroy the kitty's supply of pixies, right? We can't do that. I agree with Skippy. No, I think the only thing we have to destroy is their faith. The side eye is something Smythe used sparingly. He used it on me right then. Their faith? In their god or gods? No, something more concrete. Their faith in the security of Pixie technology. He sucked in a sharp breath. Our star team commander is smart. He caught on to my thinking right away. The Max Hulks believe their technology is ultra-secure, he agreed, muttering half to himself. Not even the Rindaloo can replicate Pixies. The technology is considered invulnerable. Even by the Rindaloo, I added.
Skippy told me the spiders have been trying to copy Pixies or intercept their communications, and they have failed. Now someone has cracked that technology. We have.
We can't reveal our existence to the enemy, he said cautiously. That's the beauty of it. We don't have to. We just need the Maxulks to think the Bosphorok have replicated Pixie technology and have used it to read their messages. They would need to shut down their entire military communication system, he mused, nodding slowly in appreciation. All the Pixies and their vaults would be instantly rendered useless. That would cripple them for years.
Longer than that, Skippy spoke up as his avatar shimmered to life on my desk. Those arrogant kitties are so confident about their tech, they don't have a workable backup. Pixie technology has been invulnerable for so long, they don't even think about it. Arrogant, stupid kitties, he chuckled. What's your plan, Joe?
It kind of depends on what you say about it. We still have a set of blank Pixies?
The answer should be yes, because that info was in the status report every morning. With Skippy, it never hurt to verify he hadn't forgotten to update the report.
Yes, those are precious, Joe. We don't have many left.
I appreciate that.
You once told me that you can disassociate and then re-tag a Pixie more than once, and that when a Pixie is re-tagged, the process leaves a residual signature?
Yes, a contamination. That is why Pixies can't be re-tagged an infinite number of times. I have learned a lot from working with the batch we got from Detroit, and recently with the ones we got from the ships we captured.
Excellent. Next question. If the kitties captured any of the Pixies we stole from their factory on Detroit, is there any way they can determine which batch they came from? Anything like that?
Oh. Smythe looked at me with an expression that said he should have thought of that, and he was glad someone had asked the question.
No, Joe, Skippy answered my question. Blank Pixies are just that. Blank.
Yeah, I believe you about that. What I'm talking about is more subtle. Like, on Earth, batches of chemicals are tagged with substances to identify where and when they were made. So if it is later realized there is a problem with the batch, they can find everything made from it.
Is there something in the manufacturing process that leaves a quantum tag or something?
Oh, I get your meaning now. Yes. The Maxulks do not tag batches of Pixies, but it is possible to determine where and when a blank Pixie was manufactured.
Shit. That could screw up everything. We can't let the kitties figure out that we broke into their factory.
Then you are screwed, dude.
Except for, you know, the awesomeness of me. I can alter the signature so Pixies can't be identified to a particular batch. I slapped the desk so hard my hand hurt.
Outstanding. Hey, can you also alter a Pixie so it is tagged in such a way that it looks like the thing wasn't created in a Maxulks factory?
He took off his ginormous hat and scratched his dome.
I guess so. Sure. Yes, I can do that.
Why do you ask?
Because what I want to do is plant a blank Pixie in the wreckage of a Bosphorok ship where the Maxulks will find it. When they examine it, I want the kitties to think that Pixie wasn't stolen from them. It was made by the Bosphorok.
Skippy whistled with approval.
Wow, that would drive the Maxulks totally batshit crazy. They would be tearing their fur out trying to discover how the bird brains made a blank set of Pixies.
That is kind of genius, Joe.
You haven't heard all of it yet. Aboard that wreck, I also want to plant a Pixie tagged to a Maxulks battleship or some other vital asset. That Pixie needs to be one you have recycled. I want the Maxulks to know their enemy has the ability to disassociate Pixies and reuse them, and to accurately copy the tagging of a Maxulks ship. Just then, a bad thought struck me. Shit. That will only work if the Maxulks know what a recycled Pixie looks like and can detect it.
Don't worry, Joe. Skippy doffed his hat to me. I've got this.
The kitties don't know that a Pixie can be recycled, but I'll make it obvious the one we plant has been previously tagged.
Hey, would it help if the previous taggings were to some of the ships we destroyed?
Brilliant.
Smythe clapped his hands.
Yeah, that would be great.
This is brilliant, Smythe mused.
During World War II, the cipher team at Bletchley Park cracked the German Enigma code.
The Allies kept it secret that they were reading German communications so the Jerrys wouldn't switch to a new code. If we allow the Maxalts to know someone has cracked their technology, we might lose the ability to intercept their messages.
That's possible, I guess, Skippy admitted.
Well, no, he shook his head. I don't think that will happen. They don't have another code to switch to. Like I said, they do not have a backup to Pixie technology. Whatever lower security system they use as an alternate, I can hack into. Probably. I can't make any promises until I know what they do.
That's good enough for me, I declared. Smythe, I want you to do two things. First, work with Skippy to find a Bosphorok shipwreck where we can plant the Pixies, or a ship we can turn into a wreck if there's not one out there. I'll do the same, and we'll compare notes.
Yes, sir.
Smythe was perched on the edge of his seat, eager to get to work.
The second task?
Try to... I sighed. Imagine how this could go sideways on it. I know it all sounds great right now, but I have a feeling the law of unintended consequences is just waiting for a chance to bite us in the ass. Walking back to my office with a very full coffee mug, I was being super careful not to spill any of it on the deck. Yes, it would have been smart to just take a sip of coffee off the top so it didn't risk sloshing all over, but I think it has been well documented that I am not smart. Plus, that coffee was about a billion freaking degrees and needed to cool before I put any of it in my mouth. Also, it was a challenge to see if I could make it all the way from the galley to my desk without spilling a drop. Smythe was waiting for me when I arrived. He stood up to greet me.
Sir, we...
Not yet. Just a few more steps, and... The coffee wobbled alarmingly before I set it down, not daring to breathe.
Success.
Yes!
Pumping a fist in triumph, I bent over the desk to slurp the hot liquid, and of course it dripped down my chin and onto my shirt. Fortunately, it was casual Friday aboard the Mighty Valkyrie, and I was wearing a black t-shirt with Army across the chest, so the stain didn't show.
Okay, sorry about that. I gestured for Smythe to sit. What's up?
We discovered a complication. My response was to scowl at him. The scowl wasn't done for effect. I hate complications, especially before coffee in the morning. My triumphant mood was fading fast. He looked at the still full mug.
Should I come back later, sir?
No, if you're going to ruin my day, let's get it over with.
It is not necessarily a bad complication. It depends on how you look at it.
Will I think it's a bad thing?
Again, he splayed his hands, palms up. It depends. We were looking for a wrecked Bosphorok ship where we could plant Pixies.
Good, because I didn't find anything.
We didn't either, Smythe acknowledged. There are many ships that have been destroyed, but we need a shipwreck that the Maxalts will search. Therefore, it must be recent. The Kitties will not go back to a wreck they have already scanned unless we give them a reason to do so. I couldn't think of a reason that wouldn't make the enemy suspicious of the information.
Well, shit. So you came to the same conclusion I did? That we need to plant the Pixies aboard a Bosphorok ship before the Maxalts attack it?
That won't work, Joe!
Skippy gleefully crushed my hopes.
Hey, that coffee is getting cold.
Oh, thanks. Picking up the mug, I sloshed it and spilled enough on the desk that Skippy's avatar had to move so he wasn't standing in a puddle. There was no rush to mop up the spill, because the flexible surface of the desk sagged, forming a pool to contain the spill. That was a cool feature of my fancy new desk. It was still too big, but I had promised to like it, and I kinda did. Pulling a towel out of a drawer, I tossed it onto the pool of liquid.
It won't work because we can't be sure the Pixies aren't damaged or destroyed in the attack?
Bingo!
Skippy gave me not just a thumbs up, but the more enthusiastic double gunpoint.
That problem, plus we would have the whole issue of capturing and boarding a Bosphorok ship to plant the Pixies.